Hello, my name is Dr. Annette Rubry, and my guest today is the Reverend Dr. Stuart Jennings, the author of a new book that focuses on the Civil War in the Nottinghamshire town of Newark. Dr. Jennings is a chaplain to the University of Warwick and Coventry University, and also an academic coordinator and lecturer in local history at the University of Warwick's Centre for Lifelong Learning. His book, These Uncertain Times, Newark and the Civilian Experience of the Civil Wars, 1640 to 1660, draws on a variety of sources to show how the townspeople coped with the conflict and the hardships of the years that followed. I began by asking him why Newark was such a rich subject for the Civil War historian.
The initial interest really was just one of the byproducts of some other work I was doing, and I was introduced, I was asked to go over to see a series of documents that survived with the Staunton family, who are a local gentry family, and when we got there discovered that it was an extremely rare survival of regimental accounts from the English Civil War. And Colonel William Staunton, literally lives 5 miles outside of Newark, so his regiment was raised of Newark and surrounding area men. So having done some work on that paper, it brought me back into Newark to have a look around, and the interest really sparked from there. It was further helped by the reorganisation of Newark and Sherwood District Council, who were organising or reorganising their paperwork, and in the process of exploring boxes of papers in their fairly dry cellar, I'm glad to say, they unearthed three or four large boxes of documents from the 19th, 18th, and we didn't know till we got into the boxes, 17th century records. And I was asked to have a look at them because they'd known I'd done some work on Colonel Staunton's regiment. And I was invited to work with the Nottinghamshire Archives to edit the papers, to catalogue what was in there. They were literally just three or four huge boxes of papers. But I was interested in the Civil War period, and as I went through cataloguing them, when I came to 17th century documents, I actually took further details and recognised by about the third box that there was some unique material surviving here. And at that point, a research project was sketched and begun.
I just really wanted to ask you about the angle of your book, because it's rather unusual. You're interested in the civilian experience of the Civil War, and I just wonder if you talk to us a little bit about the sources that you used.
One of the difficulties in the Civil War period is that there was huge disruptions. Towns sometimes changed sides, records weren't kept or haven't survived. So whilst we have a good range of sources relating broadly to military affairs and political affairs, the everyday generation of documents and the routine keeping of registers were often severely disrupted. What was obvious with these boxes of documents was that they consisted of individual sheets of paper, accounts, petitions, bills, things generated by the ordinary course of daily business. So we actually have individual annual accounts on separate sheets for the poor relief. So we have the complete poor relief details, the raising of the money, disbursement, how it was paid out, to whom it was paid, for the year 1639-40. Then we actually have a complete set of accounts for 1645-1646, which is the third and final siege. And it identifies where the monies are coming in from, identifies how the money's being paid out and to whom. And these documents just don't normally survive. The actual poor relief account book is long since gone, but these individual sheets have survived. So we were suddenly catching glimpses into ordinary people's lives. A wonderful petition from a man who got 7 children whose house had been blown up by a grenade or a mortar bomb. A petition from a widow whose husband had been killed fighting for the king. Details of houses that had to be dismantled so they could rebuild the defences round Newark. Just ordinary glimpses into people's lives. The other thing that was really exciting is that the church records are complete. Because Newark was a maiden royalist garrison, there was never the disruption of surrender and changing sides and new people coming in. So births, marriages, deaths, churchwardens' accounts, they are virtually complete from 1640 right through to 1660. There are very few parishes that have got a complete set like that. Where it does happen is often the case we also with buses, where you get one, you get lots. And we have a village literally 4 miles up the road, Upton cum Southall. And their churchwardens' accounts and their parish accounts and registers survive as well. So we've got two communities within 4 miles of each other, a maiden major royalist garrison that never surrendered to ordered to do so by the king. It was a gold mine, really.
That's so interesting. I mean, where I live in Lichfield, you have the different, you know, the parliamentarians and the royalists taking, you know, turns to kind of, you know, capture the cathedral. But that is extraordinary. All that evidence is still there.
And it will be available for people to see. This is the thing. We've not only located it, we've catalogued it. The paper and vellum manuscripts are in good condition, so they can be displayed, and people will see on the White website. We've actually printed some of them from some of the documents relating to the plague. We've got plague orders surviving, a record of what happens when plague inflicts a garrison. We're not quite sure the relationship between the military and the civilian, but we've got comprehensive records about what the civilian authorities did.
Mm-hmm.
Although my focus has been on civilian, it's raised some interesting military questions as well. Because one of the things that's interesting is that Newark is a royalist garrison that doubles and at times trebles the size of the population. Between 2,000 and 4,000 troops there. I mean, Queen Henrietta Maria arrived in 1643 at the head of an army of 2,000 troops to join a garrison of 2,000 troops there. And the total population of the town is just under 2,000. So you've gone from 2 to 6. But what's really interesting, there are some marriages recorded of officers in the garrison, but most of the soldiers are not recorded. There are just 22 soldiers recorded in the burial registers. When plague is raging, we're left to wonder what on earth's going on. Where are these soldiers being buried? And one of the things that we've identified is that there's probably a plague pit for the soldiers somewhere in the town. And some developer in future years is going to start a new project and suddenly find he's hit a plague pit. So we've no idea where that is at the moment. But we've actually been able to raise some interesting questions about the military side of it by looking at the civilian records.
And of course, the Civil War, I mean, it was a struggle between King and Parliament, but it was also a religious conflict. And the religious buildings were widely damaged by parliamentarian forces. And I just wondered, I mean, you've mentioned the parish church of St. Mary Magdalene in your book. I just wondered if you'd say something about that and how the war impacted on that building.
The war, probably, because the town didn't surrender, the impact upon the church is probably not as dramatic as, say, like Lichfield Cathedral, where horses were stabled in it. The interesting thing is that you wouldn't have, looking at evidence in the 1630s, automatically assumed that Newark would side for the king. It was a community that struggled greatly with the ship money and the assessments. So there's nothing overtly royalist in it. So that's quite a strange outlook, really. Because the garrison stayed in touch, stayed under one control of the royalist, the liturgies and the daily rounds, the song school, the paying of the song master, that continues. We have records, the choir still having robes throughout the whole period of the war. Where the church does suffer is through the three sieges. It gets caught up. I mean, the steeple is extremely high. It's the most prominent feature in the Trent Valley, that part. Wonderful observation post, and in fact, we have an eyewitness account of the second siege being lifted by an eyewitness in the steeple. So it gets a lot of damage from the bombardments during the three sieges, which are repaired during the war. Looking at the bills and the accounts for 1646-1647, I have a good reason for believing that the royalists began to strip some of the lead to make bullets. as the siege progressed. But before the town surrendered, the vicar actually hid many of the vestments. So in 1660, the prayer books, the vestments come out again. The surplices are washed, the vestments and the robes are washed and then hidden. And there's a wonderful record of the payment of people being asked to hide the church artifacts. So the pulpit goes to one house, the font goes to another. It's extraordinary. Mm. And then it was further helped by the fact that plague was raging when the town finally surrendered.
Mm.
And so the parliamentarians just didn't go into the town till much later. Mm. By the time the parliamentarian garrison was established to supervise, a lot of the heat of the politics of it had diminished.
Mm.
And the parliamentarian soldiers that were moved in were generally Nottingham troops. So when you've got local parliamentarians policing a local town, the dynamics are very different. You know, we don't get the new model army where there's soldiers from all over the country. Mm. There's more of a local atmosphere with that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to Newark today, the church is still very impressive. There's still the remains of chantry chapels.
Mm.
There wasn't the damage. No, Newark is a gem that people drive round and miss so much.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the plague after the town had surrendered to the parliamentarians. Mm. I mean, can you tell us a bit more about what happened during that period? How long did that go on for?
Yeah, one of the initial pieces of work I did, because the registers were complete and a number of other documents had come to light in this box, I was actually able to do some work on the demographics of the town, what was going on. And we've identified that the biggest killer for the civilian population wasn't the fighting, it wasn't even hunger, it was predominantly typhus, three major outbreaks of typhus caused by body lice and overcrowding. And then from about November 1645, and then it goes quiet and starts again in March in 1646, the outbreak of plague. Typhus and plague killed between a quarter and a third of the population. Massive impact. And what we're able to do is actually see through the documentation and the evidences and the records how the plague is identified, how they begin to deal with it, the lull in the winter months when the rats aren't so active, and then the full-blown outbreak after. So we have records. I'm able to detail what's happening in families, some of the families, including the initial church warden who identifies it. We're able to see how the local authority make arrangements, including what depths the plague pit must be dug. We see how people are confined into houses, and payments are made for food and beer to be delivered to them in the houses. Payments for people to search the corpses to see whether there is plague. Payment for watchmen. There is a visited house, which is basically a large building where people are put into. But what is obvious is that the civilians who have got houses in Newark are shut into their own homes. So who's going into the visited house? Again, one can only conjecture, but it almost looks as though the visited house was used for the soldiers. But there are very few records about the visited house after January 1646. So I'm wondering whether the army takes control of the visited house and puts its own troops there. But what we're actually able to do is to detail what's going on and to give an impression of what the impact is on the town. And one of the things that's really significant, and this really is, one always likes to think you're finding new things, but particularly people hadn't believed that plague was around in Newark in 1646. The general feeling was that the conditions were bad and people were dying, but people sometimes use the term plague loosely. And so the general consensus was there'd been plague in Nottinghamshire at the start of the 17th century. There was plague in the 1660s, of course, when we had the Great Plague in London as well. But the feeling was that there wasn't plague. And what the evidence has been able to prove categorically is that that there definitely was plague in there. And it was probably brought to Newark by Prince Rupert and his soldiers, who came straight to the town from the surrender of Bristol and we know that plague was endemic in Bristol at the time of the surrender by the Royalists. So the plague was actually carried into the town by Prince Rupert's soldiers. One of the interesting things with a complete set of registers is that you can actually begin to look at the patterns of mortality, who's dying, when, the sorts of months. And because the details are so comprehensive for the town, we can actually begin to identify what sort of endemics are going on, which is really interesting. Mm.
You mentioned that Newark is a gem, really, with so much that's been preserved. I mean, what would people see visiting today? What can they see relating to the Civil War?
Well, obviously the castle, and the castle is very interesting because it only survives on probably two and a bit sides. It was supposed to be dismantled after the surrender of the town, so it could never be used again. And the castle overlooks the River Trent, or one of the branches of the River Trent. What you would normally do if you slight a garrison is dismantle the outer walls. The curtain wall of the castle and the towers that are actually face onto the Trent, which are the outer walls of the community, stand to almost to their full height. They've not been slighted at all. Where the castle has disappeared is where it comes into the town. And one has the sneaking suspicion that Parliament did very little to slight the castle because of the plague. Mm-hmm. Just made token gestures, and actually the castle was dismantled by the townspeople rebuilding the town after the war. So, but there is a fair bit of castle to see, including some impressive dungeons, one of the best 12th century gatehouses anywhere in the UK. The siege works by the besieging parliamentarians survive in various degrees of to be seen above ground, but by and large it is the most impressive surviving siege works anywhere in the British Isles from the Civil War period, including a major Civil War sconce, the Queen's Sconce, which we did some work on. Again, I was involved with that. I actually wrote some material, historical material for that. The Queen's Sconce, because it faced the south, was actually garrisoned by the regular troops. There was another sconce to the north, which faced the Scottish army. Because the Scots weren't perceived as much of a threat, the townspeople looked after the northern sconce. That's pretty complete. You can actually go and see a Civil War sconce that stands 30 foot above the ground level, still there. Very impressive. And again, there's a tour around the grounds. One of the things that we've been involved with is actually trying to negotiate with, and we'll perhaps talk about this later, to establish a museum. Huge amounts of things were there, coins, a lot of gold was buried, siege coins. As coins became scarce, people began to cut up their plate. We've got cannons, we've got musket balls, we've got pieces of armour. We've got a whole range of things that can be displayed to the public. And one of the reasons why my research was quite important is that we're being able to contextualise many of the artefacts into the story of the community. And this was one of the reasons why we put a bid into the National Lottery Heritage Fund, because we see the place as being of national importance.
In fact, I was just going to finish off by asking you to tell us a bit more about that project.
Yeah. We actually have in Newark what's called the Magnus Schoolhouse, which used to be a schoolhouse. It's it's in need of major restoration, but it is basically a Tudor schoolroom, a timber frame schoolroom with substantial stone additions. And that will be the basis of the museum, because it actually goes back, some of the records that we've been working on talk about that school there, meeting at the Magnus School. We felt it was important that both documents and artefacts were tied in with the physical evidence that there is to see on the ground. Newark is important because actually there were both Irish, Scottish parliamentarians and royalists there. In terms of the royalists, Charles I visited at least three times in the Civil War. Henrietta Maria, his queen, was there. Prince Rupert was there. We do know that Oliver Cromwell was involved on a number of occasions in around Newark with parliamentarian forces. Many of the key figures in the Civil War visited Newark. It was a key player. So it's part of the national story, not just the English, but the Scottish and Welsh and Irish were there. And in fact, I shall have some research coming out in October being published about the impact of the Scottish army on Newark. So it has a British context, not just an English. So we decided that we would put a bid in, the Newark and Sherwood District Council, the archives, and a small team of academics. And I was one of that team because of the book and the research I'd done. I actually, many, many years ago, did my PhD at Nottingham Trent. So I know some of the academics there. So a small team of three of us. One of the academics is involved with the Royal Armouries as well. And then my former PhD supervisor many years ago, Professor Bennett, we actually produced a statement, an academic statement of why Newark was important. And then the council put in into part of the bid a business model. The council put in a bid about what they would provide, and we put in a bid for £3.5 million that would be partly match funded by a variety of other people, including local councils. And we're delighted to get it. We got the full amount. It's probably one of the biggest single grant awards. For a project in a smaller community like Newark, which will see the establishment of a Civil War museum as part of a bigger museum. Newark is important because it's the first crossing across the River Trent before it flows into the Humber estuary. The Great North Road passes literally alongside Newark-on-Trent, as does the Foss Way. So it really is at the heart of the arterial route connections between London and Edinburgh. It always has been important. But because it's a small market town, because the development of the town was partly slowed down by the Civil War, and it wasn't till the end of the 18th, beginning of the 19th century, that we see the development that happened on in many other towns, that much has survived. So we will actually have we already have a small museum at the Civil War Siege Works at Sconce Park, Devon Pont, Sconce Park. But we now will actually have a museum that will display many of the documents, many of the artefacts, and will actually provide a commentary and context for the surviving remains that can be seen above ground. And it will actually act as a focus as people go out and explore the castle, explore the siege works, explore the beautiful scenery. And Newark is built alongside two branches of the Trent and the River Devon, so there's beautiful scenery as well as outstanding remaining historical evidence.
That's lovely. Thank you so much, Stuart, for talking to us. That's really interesting. And do visit the Knowledge Centre again soon for more insights and expertise from Warwick's research community.